You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I'm Julie Broadway, president at the American Horse Council.
And I'm Megan Arsman, marketing and communications specialist with the American Horse Council. And you are listening to the special monthly American Horse Council episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Tuesday, March 5th, 2024.
Good morning, Horse World.
It's time to hear from the American Horse Council in this monthly episode of Horses in the Morning.
Thank you for tuning in this morning and happy March, everyone. Spring is just around the corner, which means more time to spend outside and with the horses. I'm excited to continue working with my daughter and her new show mini as they learn about each other more this spring before the show season. As I'm sure our listeners can attest to, Julie, I'm always amazed at how much horses teach us. We have horse trainers that are supposed to be teaching and training the horse, but in actuality, it's really the horses that are the ones that are teaching and training us for the most part.
Oh, you aren't kidding, Megan. I was reflecting as we were getting ready for this episode. It's been at least 40 years ago when I was right out of college and I was dating a young man and I didn't know where that relationship was going. And on Wednesday afternoon, I would leave my office to go for my weekly horseback riding lesson. And they would all say, "Oh, you're going to see a man about a horse." And I would say, "No, I'm going to see a horse about a man." So, yeah, there's so many great things that horses bring to our lives, so much they give and contribute to us. And I just think it's so fascinating. All the staff at the American Horse Council, listeners, are horse lovers and horse enthusiasts. And we feel so honored to do the work we do to kind of give back to, you know, what we love ourselves. So we're excited about this episode.
Exactly. I'm excited to learn more about equine-assisted learning. There are so many different aspects to it, as we're going to find out today with our guests and all. And I think it's just a wonderful thing. So let's just get to it and let's learn some more.
So listeners, our first guests today are two ladies from Strides to Success, which is a facility located in central Indiana that provides a variety of services utilizing horses, from mental health therapy, life coaching, professional development, and KID, capital K-I-D, mentoring. So we're going to learn more about that. First, we're going to meet Debbie Anderson. Debbie started her partnership with horses when she was a child, and it was that experience that provided the catalyst for a lifetime of dedication to the equine industry. With a degree in animal science, she worked in the field of veterinary medicine for 8 years. And in 1992, her focus changed to working with youth who had at-risk behaviors that were disengaged from the educational system. Debbie developed a learning model that addresses academics, promotes developmental assets, and teaches life skills by motivating and partnering participants with horses. In May of 2004, her passion for serving led her to Strides to Success, the first center in the United States to become accredited with PATH International, or the Professional Association of Therapeutic Horsemanship International, for mental health standards. Currently, the Strides Farm hosts 4 private mental health practices and an integrative medical doctor. And under her leadership, Strides team specializes in providing support to schools, mental health agencies, residential facilities, and veteran services through trauma-informed equine-assisted learning services that incorporates horses. Their team encourages participants to acquire new life skills, recognize their natural talents and abilities, develop problem-solving strategies, and learn healthy decision-making skills that can promote new patterns of behavior. Strides has served the Veterans Administration in Indianapolis, first responders, the Vet Center, and the National Guard by introducing skills that enhance leadership, discover new patterns of behavior after deployment, pain management, and promote healthy and trusting relationships. She travels nationally and internationally, and I bet she keeps a suitcase packed all the time, to be perfectly honest. And she serves as a clinician that specializes in teaching facilitation skills business, sustainability, and teaching centers how to develop equine-assisted services programs that will meet their community's needs. She has authored and co-authored many resources that are utilized worldwide in equine-assisted services industry. And as a national speaker, lecturer, and author, she brings a passionate approach to the well-being of people through sharing the language of horses to promote changes in their lives. So that's a little bit about Debbie, who we're going to meet shortly. And I think you are going to introduce us to Blair.
That's right. Joining Debbie is Blair McKissick. She is the director of horsework education at Strides to Success and has been in the field of human-animal interaction and experiential education for over 20 years. She earned her bachelor's in recreation therapy and her master's in education and has a PhD in eco-psychology. Blair is a PATH registered instructor, certified equine specialist, EGALA level 1, and certified well coach. She is the chair of the Equine Facilitated Learning Community for PATH and works nationally to establish standards in equine assisted learning. Blair is honored to be a part of the Stride staff as an instructor and workshop facilitator, and we are honored, Debbie and Blair, to have you guys join us today. Thank you so much.
You are welcome. We're excited to be here.
Well, let's just kick this thing off. I am certain there are people out there listening to this podcast while they're mucking the stalls, and they're saying to themselves, equine-assisted learning, what is that? How is that different from, say, equine-assisted services or equine-assisted therapies, or what is that? Are we doing something that we are teaching horses by equine-assisted learning? What does that all mean, Debbie or Blair? Somebody fill our listeners in.
We can definitely help you with that one. Deb, you want me to go?
Sure.
Okay. So when we define equine-assisted learning, and just so the listeners know, we spent many years working with PATH and with the Equine-Assisted Learning Task Force to help define equine-assisted learning. And this was many years ago. I think it started about 13 years ago. So we went through lots of iterations of the definition. But it kind of boils down to the fact that it is a non-therapy experiential learning service that is facilitated by specifically trained or certified professionals who possess the appropriate training and experience to facilitate EAL in one of the three specialties, which are defined as education, personal development, or organizations, and that they are trained to facilitate EAL activities in an environment that integrates equine-human interaction. And the focus of this is on the development of life skills. And that's really important because that is part of that dividing line between whether we are a therapy service or a learning service, which we'll talk about a little bit later, I'm sure. But the focus of the sessions really are on developing those skills that they need to meet their personal or professional goals.
Awesome.
I think it's kind of interesting because first and foremost in this country, it seems like therapeutic riding is where this all kind of started. And as that grew, we would go into different school settings. We would go into working with different children and find that they didn't exactly fall into that adaptive riding or that therapeutic grouping. They needed something else. They needed more mentoring. They needed more skills in their toolbox to address things like anxiety or goal setting or decision making, those kinds of things. And so there was this plethora, and just like Katie in her podcast described how organizations started incorporating horses, coaches started incorporating horses, and yet it didn't fit in that adaptive riding or therapeutic riding grouping. So there was this whole group of other or miscellaneous, if you will, services that were happening. And so, as Blair said, it took a long time, many years to try and dissect that miscellaneous group of and wrap a definition around it, and to isolate the different components that are under it into that education, personal development, and the organizational groupings of services. So it's a very broad area of services.
Oh, no doubt about it. Yeah. And I'm sitting here, my brain's just whirling because I'm thinking, okay, I'm new in my career. I need to develop better networking skills. I need to work on my public speaking skills. I can come up with all kinds of professional development things. And I'm thinking, if I could do that through working with you guys and being around horses, wow, that seems like a win-win. So it's really fascinating to me that you guys have found that niche of taking all those miscellaneous things you're describing, Debbie, and figuring out how to put them in a model and help people attain or accelerate the skill sets that they have to achieve certain personal, professional goals, or even organizational goals, because you sometimes are probably working with organizations or groups who want to have better dynamics or whatever the end objective might be.
Well, and as you think about those life skills, think about those groups of teenagers, right? Mm. Who don't always have the coping skills necessary to deal with everyday just life. And, you know, maybe therapy didn't work for them. Maybe they're not ready for therapy. Maybe they just need that support to grow. Think about trust. Think about confidence. Think about all the things that all of us learned from being around horses when we were young. It's the reason we have the passion for this work. It's because we gained those things from that interaction. We learned the hard way, right? What happened when we didn't pay attention? When our energy was super high because we're all chaotic and, you know, we're carrying in what happened in the day and we're not present. We learned all those things. The horse responded to that. It was that instant biofeedback. So those are the life skills really, you know, that we can create the container. We can create the environment that helps them learn that those skills, but also discover them from the inside out, because that's another distinction between the therapeutic riding and the teaching of the horsemanship skills, as opposed to EAL. Here, we're trying to create that environment where they can learn those things organically. They learn them on their own because we know that the best learning happens from the inside out. That's why we call it experiential facilitation, because we're setting them up. We're asking good questions. We're providing just enough teaching that's necessary for the welfare of the horse, to keep people safe, and to provide them those tools to get started so that they can feel that success.
Oh, that is so cool.
I feel your passion, Blair. So tell us how you got inspired to go into this. What was the impetus that got you into EAL?
I think both Blair and I started out as therapeutic riding instructors, and we were working with kiddos with special needs. And that was so cool, you know, lifting kids up out of wheelchairs and putting them on the back of the horse and all of that. But when we started incorporating schools into our program, we would go to the schools and we would see these kiddos that were in these rooms that had been expelled or suspended, and they had their hoodies up, their heads down, and they were just sitting in a room doing nothing. And we thought, you know, those are the kids. They don't have any disabilities. They may have some other different challenges going on, but what about those kids? You know, and so we started embracing them. And the very first program we did is we took the kids that were in school suspended and matched them with the kids in the therapeutic riding program. And we taught them how to be volunteers, which meant that they needed to follow instructions. They needed to give us their full attention. They needed to pay attention to safety. They needed to worry about somebody else and think about somebody else, not only the student they were helping, but the horse. And so all of this process, after 6 or 8 weeks of them just volunteering there, it was amazing. We had a before and an after picture, and the before was like, You know, it was like no smiles, no teeth. It was like, can't believe I got to be here, you know. And then after, they had smiles, they had their whole body language changed, their whole physical appearance changed. They were proud of themselves. They finally had something that they were successful at doing. And that was just volunteering. So that was really the inspiration for us to, you know, take a turn and think about that youth at risk population. And when you did that, they needed a different way of facilitation. They didn't need the therapeutic writing instructor type of teaching. They needed that more experiential piece because they weren't going to be taught to act. They needed to be involved in. And so that was the big shift for us.
Well, and I'm sure that Debbie will talk a little bit more about this in her background, because too, you know, how we started out just as professionals was a big part of it. You know, I grew up riding horses, but I also grew up working with the zoo through my mom, and had the really cool experience of working with lots of different types of animals growing up. So primates and raptors. That's and cool. Elephants. And it was pretty amazing. And so for me, I wanted to really study, why is it that humans are so captivated by animals? Why is it that, you know, we want to reach out and touch? And why is it that I liked animals so much better than I liked people? And you know, I think a lot of us experience that too. So when I got into college, I found recreation therapy because vet school was probably just not going to happen. recreation therapy was like fully embracing. They were like, okay, let's see what we can do, because a pathway academically for animal assisted therapy didn't exist. Occupational therapy didn't want anything to do with it at the time. And counseling didn't want anything to do with it at the time. There was nobody to study under. So I actually ended up doing dolphin assisted therapy as one of my internships. And then
adventure therapy.
So, you know, it was all mental health related as well as disability related. So for me, again, it was just this idea of, oh my gosh, animals can be such a huge healing part of our journey. And when I came back, obviously dolphins weren't an option to continue my practice. And so that's when I found therapeutic riding. And that was when I met Debbie. So I was like fresh out of college, you know, totally optimistic and super excited and a whole lot of energy. And she was so graceful, and they gave me a home and taught me about therapeutic riding. And it was that combination of, oh my gosh, horses and the disability and the stuff that I learned as an RT and the things that I learned from just nature interaction in general, it all kind of came together. But there was always that missing piece. There was always that missing piece of, you know, the show world, show jumping. It wasn't it. Therapeutic riding was amazing, but there was still, again, that barn connection, you know, that stuff that happens in the barn that was missing. And at one point in my life, I went to, and this was around grad school, went to an EGALA training. And I think Debbie had already been to an EGALA training at this point, so it was still new to me, but it was like, holy crap, you know, experiential ed meets horses. I was like, it all fits. And so that was to me like super exciting, because I was like, I could pull all that work I did with ropes courses and experiential ed and pair it with the horses. So to me, that was kind of that penultimate moment of, oh my gosh, it fits.
So I'm gonna correct myself, Dr. Blair, because Blair has a PhD.
Yeah.
And I just have to ask, eco-psychology.
Yes.
Tell me what as my husband would have said.
It's a PhD in tree hugging. you know, but honestly, again, at the time, it was really hard to try and find an academic path to find others to study under. I couldn't leave Indiana at the time. Purdue had Center for Human Animal Bond, but they didn't have anything degree granting. And so I spent a lot of time in trying to find a degree that would allow me to really study this. And I found the Applied Eco-Psychology program. It was an online program through a tiny little university in Hawaii. And none of them had any research background. And I wanted to do research and I wanted to work, you know, focus in on the horses. And I ended up studying at Strides to Success. We have the Vets program, which again, I know Deb will talk about. And we had a client that I did a case study for 3 years who was a survivor of military sexual trauma and also kind of dealt with that intersectionality of the military and LGBTQ. And really studying how horses helped that from a learning context for trauma, because she was one who was refusing therapy. And we really feel like EAL is a really good way to get people engaged again so that they can then be ready and move into therapy. And that's why we're so really adamant about the scope of practice. But that was what it was. Epideco psychology was just this general, broader context of humans and the natural world. How are we a part of it? How do we connect with it? And then how do we help others connect?
Oh, I'm just so impressed with the way you've blended all that together, Blair. It's an amazing journey that you've been on. Wow.
It makes sense.
I think you've got the next question, or I'll keep going because I'm just so intrigued.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. Are you guys finding that assisted learning, that equine assisted learning is it growing? Is it still kind of well kept secret? Or how are you guys kind of seeing it starting to spread and take over? A little bit later we'll talk with Katie Navarro Bradley about how she uses it with businesses and organizations. But for you guys, do you see that it's a growing field?
Absolutely. That miscellaneous group found its voice several years ago. PATH International did a really cool thing. It was a consensus building process to help to find optimal terminology to address all the growing different types of services that were developing. And out of that process, there was a summit, and several of us were invited to represent equine assisted learning and to see if it was a big enough item there that would require its own section under equine assisted services. Mm-hmm. And so as we went through the summit process, and then there was a work group that was appointed, and it was overwhelmingly decided that and apparent that equine assisted learning was one of the fastest growing areas under the auspice of the equine assisted services blanket. And so, yes, it is growing. People, and the fun thing about it is that people have been doing it for a long time, but kind of in their own capsule, you know, wherever they were. Mm-hmm. So now that it's been identified, it's been defined, there's also been competencies that have been identified to give it, you know, to give it that foundation. And so people are flocking to it. They're so grateful that this now has a home and it has a structure. And so it is very popular. We, in fact, Blair and I were fortunate enough to be the developers of a course for PATH International called The Fundamentals in EAL. And the class has just gone live in the last year and it keeps selling out. So,
oh, wow.
It's sold out, you know, and so the interest is there. It's just, and I think too, and this kind of goes into the business of running a facility, but it equine assisted learning contributes very well to the sustainability of an organization. An organization that is really heavily dependent on one particular service, it's difficult, and one particular population is really difficult. And so if you can open up your services to serve a vast majority of the community, you know, they all have opportunities that they can participate, whether it's corporations, whether it's schools, whether it's coaching clients. It really, you can accommodate all of them under the service of equine assisted learning. And so therefore you have a better connection with your community and a wider scope of people that can incorporate your service. And so I think that's really important for the sustainability of organizations and centers and businesses.
Oh, that's an amazing story. I know we struggle a lot in the nonprofit industry, trying to think about expanding our products and services and thinking about how do we stay on mission, but how do we incorporate different ways to be sustainable, all those things. So it's nice, Debbie, to hear that you guys have thought through that and have kind of brought that to the forefront. Talk a minute about one of the programs that I'm just always so enamored with, which is your Veterans Equine Transition Services, your VETS program. Talk a little bit about that and maybe share a story or two of success that came out of that. At our conference this year in June, the American Horse Council is going to have a panel discussion on equine-assisted services, and we're going to have the program director from Loudoun Therapeutic Riding Center and one of her veterans is going to come and talk about what they've gained from that. So I'm looking forward to that story, but tell me about your program.
So do you want me to talk about it? And you tell the stories. Debbie is so good at the story part. She really is, much better than I am. So the VETS program, you know, Deb and I were at a conference and we came back and all of a sudden there were emails popping up into our email inbox. And Debbie looked at me and she's like, Blair, do we have a veterans program? What is this? And it was all of the emails coming from PATH when they first got that that grant. And we were getting referrals. And so I happened to have my roommate from college works for the VA. She's a recreation therapist. I now happen to work for the Military Family Research Institute and at Purdue also. And we were ready to hit the ground running and to serve that population. And we ended up creating a curriculum that kind of defined what those characteristics we felt that they needed. So we were addressing those who were transitioning from active duty to civilian life. Debbie is ingrained with the National Guard, working with their chaplaincy service to help create and bring programs that are offered through the National Guard and bring those to life by incorporating horses to help those who are actively a part of the National Guard on that reserve status. And we also looked at really what do the families need. So if they happen to have some post-traumatic stress, if they've got other diagnoses that are really inhibiting their ability to have functional relationships, whether that is from deployment or separation, or whatever that might be. So we developed those kind of, we defined those characteristics. We created a curriculum. We created one curriculum that was for one-on-one. We created another curriculum that was for groups, and we piloted those. And then through our relationship with the VA, we also created a curriculum specifically for the pain clinic that they brought out several clients from that clinic. And so we felt like we needed to create something that was tailored to them.
Yeah, I think one of the current things that we are doing, the National Guard uses the Speed of Trust curriculum that Stephen Covey had specifically designed for the military. And so we were given that curriculum and we were asked to bring it to life through the horses, through the equine assisted learning. And so it was a 2-day workshop that they offer with the focus on leadership. One is leadership, and then there's another one that they incorporate married couples. And so that was a lot of fun to take their curriculums and put the magic of the horses into it to bring the points out. You know, they use the lenses in that book and in that curriculum. And so it was really fun. Okay, let's see. how can we bring the lenses lesson to life, incorporating the horses? And it's just magic. It's just magic. The veterans and the servicemen that have all and women have that have taken it just have glowing results and love it. So
that's awesome.
We've got several scheduled for this year already. But one of the stories that comes to my mind was a gentleman that came, and we always do kind of this little assessment. It's a very informal kind of a walkabout because we feel like the veterans need to have an expectation of what they're going to do in order for them to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. So we do a little walk about the farm and kind of show them the different areas. And then I'll ask them, I'll say, if there was one thing that you would like to change or that you would like to learn about, you know, your life that would make your life easier for tomorrow, what would that be? And so this one soldier looked at me and he had been wounded. And he had kind of his hand was like probably 3/4 of the way amputated up. And he called it it. He said, mm-hmm. I want it to find a job. And he said, I would love for it to just be able to hold my son's hand. And he said, and I can't find anything that it can do. And so we got him in the round pen and we had just this wonderful experience. We had a horse at liberty and I gave him a carrot stick and a rope. And he had the rope over one hand and the carrot stick in it. And he learned how to communicate with that horse. He learned how to ask him to walk, ask him to trot, turn him around just by using his body language. And before you knew it, it had a job. It was managing that carrot stick and it managing that rope beautifully. And he didn't even know it until the end. And when I told him, I said, look what you did. And he said, I did that. And from that point on, he was crying and I was crying and he no longer referred to that hand as it, you know, and it had a purpose and he had found that. And it just took that moment with the horse to get his mind shifted, you know, to a different place, for that to happen. And then
what a powerful story, man. Yeah.
And we have these wonderful activities that we do in equine assisted learning that are all focused on, you know, being in the moment, being mindful, connecting, and realizing that they're not broken, you know, and it's through that process that we kind of find that foundation for a person to rebuild themselves and rejuvenate based on their strengths, not on their previous story. And help them create a new story. It's just very cool to know the power of the horse.
Yeah.
And how it influences lives so much.
So Debbie and Blair, I could talk all day with you guys about this, but we only have a limited amount of time. So what I want to do is kind of wrap up by saying, listeners, I really want to encourage you, go check out stridestosuccess.org and learn more about all the things that they offer. Learn more about equine assisted learning in general, and sort of become better attuned to the possibilities that are out there if you open your mind to how equine assisted learning can bring you new skills and new opportunities and those kinds of things. So Debbie, Blair, thank you so
much.
Great, great stories and content there.
Definitely. You should have warned us about the onions you were bringing.
Right.
Thank you, ladies, so much.
So listeners, today's AHC podcast is brought to you by Merck Animal Health. Merck Animal Health believes that if we all do right by the horse, we'll never do wrong. That's why they're driven by an unconditional commitment to the horse and to the veterinarians and the communities who support them. From infectious disease tracking through the equine respiratory biosurveillance program to building a sustainable profession through a veterinary well-being study to create equine health products with the highest level of safety, efficacy, Merck Animal Health is unconditional. It's just who they are. Learn more about MerckAnimalHealthUSA.com.
Our next guest is Katie Navarro Bradley. She is passionate about partnering with horses to help individuals and teams elevate their communication skills, tap into emotional intelligence, and prioritize well-being and mindfulness so they can thrive personally and professionally. Based in New York State, she is an International Coaching Federation ACC certified executive coach and a certified E3A facilitator. She is also an author, thought leadership consultant, and a writer, which is where I met Katie, through the American Horse Publications. So Katie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Megan and Julie, for having me on. I'm excited to be here today.
Katie, now I have to say, when I first heard, like when you started talking about doing this kind of stuff a few years ago with this program, I really wasn't that knowledgeable about the benefits. But now I'm definitely learned a lot more and following you and doing a lot more research on things with equine-assisted learning. So how did you find yourself studying equine-assisted learning, and what made you take the route of addressing adults in workplaces?
It was a long journey to this point. If I think back to my childhood, like our listeners here, I grew up around horses. They were my safe place to go and cry on their shoulder and help through difficult times. My father actually battled cancer twice, and there was a point where we thought we were going to lose him. And horses were where I found that peace and that strength to move through that point in time. But I never thought about what that meant as a bigger picture until probably about 4 years ago. So as you mentioned, Megan, I built my career as a freelance writer in the horse industry while I was working full-time jobs. And as that business grew and I finally went out on my own and launched my own company, I finally had time to explore this passion that had started in college with leadership. I had done my college's leadership certification program. I had done chamber leadership events. And so when I finally had this extra time on my hands, I thought coaching could be the next thing in my life. And I had a friend who was also into coaching. So we had been bouncing all of this off of each other. But it wasn't until I got into the ICF approved class that the light bulb went off and I said, oh my gosh, I could partner with my horses to do this work. Even though I knew people were doing it, it had just never occurred to me until the instructors asked us to really identify our niche and where we were passionate in making a difference in people's lives. And, you know, just knowing the power of horses and how they have helped me, you know, through tough situations at work, helped me become a better communicator, I thought this is really the next step in my journey.
Right. That's so cool. Cause yeah, you definitely cannot underestimate the power of the horse, right, Julie?
No, not at all. I'm intrigued, Katie. Talk to us a little bit about how you're using horses to work with businesses and various association groups. I'm thinking completely outside the box of people who probably don't know anything about horses or aren't exposed to horses, but you're going to bring them into that world. But in the process, you're also going to offer them some skills that they can use back, you know, back in the office. Talk a little bit about that.
It has been very interesting to see who shows up in these classes because it's everybody who was around a horse as a kid, but didn't get to live that dream as an adult to I've had individuals who grew up in the city of Albany and never have been around livestock. And, you know, to hear them call horses livestock to us who are around horses every day, you know, I have to remember where they come from. But what I tell people is, you know, you don't have to know anything about a horse to come and participate and gain some knowledge. You don't even have to know the difference between the nose and the tail. We don't do any riding. Everything is on the ground. And we start with activities to first introduce folks to horses. And so one of my favorite activities is to put two horses into a round pen together and have the group watch what the horses are doing, how they're interacting with one another, how they're interacting with the people that are there at the session. And during that activity, I have them, the participants, circle a list of words or words from a list of how they would describe what's going on. And after we observe that for about 5 or 10 minutes, we come out and we debrief and we talk about, well, how did you make that decision? How did you come to that judgment? You know, we all make judgments. And so I refer that back to when we're meeting people in new board positions that we have, interviewing people and making decisions about who is the next right fit in our teams, or, you know, any sort of permutation of how we get to know people and make judgments. And you can see the light bulb go on in their head, like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize, you know, how I'm thinking about a situation until I saw the horses and we talked through, you know, that process.
Oh, it sounds like you're almost doing your own version of a DISC profile, you know, like a personality survey to get at, you know, what are people's strengths and weaknesses and what judgments they make and, you know, all those kinds of things.
Exactly. And depending on the group that comes, we do actually dig into DISC or Clifton Strengths. A lot of the programs, folks just come, you know, and they haven't taken that assessment before. But if the group is coming and I know that they've taken that in advance, we do work that into what we talk about throughout the day.
Cool.
Yeah, that is, I love it. And I just love seeing, like, I imagine the expression on people's faces, especially those that have never really been around horses. So how do you encourage the employers to, what I say is, like, think outside the cubicle to try this type of extracurricular training or bonding? Because I can kind of see, especially with you being in New York State and being in the Albany area and everything, you know, of course, everybody thinks of New York City and, you know, all the big, like, corporate offices and stuff like that. But how do you really kind of get employers to say, hey, this might be a great way to help with life at work?
That has been an interesting challenge. What I've done is, when I started, I did a series of free demos. So I let people come and did two-hour mini sessions, essentially. Let them meet and greet the horses, run them through an activity or two to give them a taste of what it was like. And I have used that to start word of mouth advertising and allow it to grow organically. And one thing that I learned when I was in my ICF course is that this isn't going to be for everyone. And I have to get comfortable with the fact that some people are just going to say no. They aren't even going to hear beyond how it can help in these situations. One example that I always kind of chuckle about is when I had done a leadership class with one of the chambers, I reached out to a woman who taught Myers-Briggs as part of that academy. And I said, oh, you know, I'm doing this new kind of leadership, wondered if I could show you what it's about. Maybe there's opportunities that we could create some synergies. She would not let me speak beyond the word horse. Absolutely not. I'm not interested. Click. Which I thought was interesting coming from somebody who specializes in leadership development. But it was a good lesson in, you know, I have to find the people who are receptive to this. And it's been more people than I would have thought. Just an example, I was on a call yesterday with a woman who runs a ghostwriting agency, and she manages people to help get content written. And I just mentioned, she asked what I do outside of writing. I mentioned this, and we're now talking about her bringing her research and development team to come and do a session. So it's about finding people that are receptive to the idea and doing something different.
Okay, now I'm going to turn the tables on you, because I bet we have people listening to what you're describing and they're saying, I work in a very dysfunctional organization. Can I send them to you and you fix them?
I won't say that I fix them. It's, you know, I can't, the thing about coaching is the individual has to change. I can't force change upon anybody.
Right.
But what I hope is that I help them see things in a new way. One thing I have heard from participants is, inevitably, someone will always pull me aside after the event and say, I've just never really felt part of the team, or I've really struggled with these three people on the team. And just seeing them in a different light has helped me appreciate their strengths or how we approach things differently. And so, you know, there's no magical wave your wand and fix things. But if it helps people pause and reevaluate some sticky points in their teams, you know, that's what I hope that I can help them accomplish.
Oh, self-reflection is so important. Okay. So this was supposed to be my next question. You know, I'm interested in two parts to this. First of all, there are people who just aren't horse people, or they're extremely afraid of horses. So you've got one end of the spectrum, where it's somebody who's like, I've got to go do this because my boss said so, and I'm not really comfortable with it at all. To the other end of the spectrum, who is somebody who is a horse person and thinks they know everything there is to know, and they don't see how this is going to be of any value to them. What's the tricks or the tips, Katie, for how you navigate both ends of those?
That is quite the dynamic. Usually in the businesses, I don't have somebody who's so into horses that they overshadow everybody. I did have one occasion last fall where there was a woman who had horses of her own and actually cared for other horses. And I saw her kind of hang back. And I would ask her, you know, I purposely would try to ask questions to draw her in. But in that same group, this was a banking team. There were 16 of them. And there were two men who were absolutely terrified of horses, made no bones about being terrified of touching, being around anything with the horses. And what I always tell people is, you know, this is their experience. I hope that they choose to come into the arena and join us with the horses, but they also have the choice to stand outside the round pen and watch what's going on. And after every activity, we do a debrief, and there is just as much opportunity to contribute to what they're experiencing in themselves and their teammates by watching as there is from being in the arena. I have yet to have anybody take me up on the offer of standing outside, even the ones who are terrified. And what's been really interesting, especially with that banking team, the way that they rallied to support those team members, you know, telling them, oh, you know, you're doing a great job, or giving them a hint of, remember, hold the lead rope this way, or, you know, so it's interesting how a team that may be a little dysfunctional back at the office, all of a sudden they recognize that their team member needs a little support, and they step up to offer that encouragement.
That is cool. I love that. And I bet that's just got to be so fulfilling to see and watch sometimes. I just love that kind of stuff.
It really is.
And you use your own personal horses, correct?
I do. I have a small... My herd constantly changes. So I have borrowed some friends' horses that I know. You know, we always test them in advance to make sure that there aren't going to be any dominance issues or pecking order issues. But, you know, I try to use my own. One had a baby last year, so she was out of commission. Right. My other horse is out at a trainer right now, so I'll have to fill in, but somehow we always make it work.
So, Katie, what have you learned yourself while working with businesses and companies as you say, Katie, the coach? What's something that you've really gotten taken away from your experiences so far?
That is a great question, Megan. I think that there's so much. You know, I used to always say that I did not like public speaking and I did not want to stand in front of a group of people and speak. There's something, yeah, exactly. There's something magical about horses. They suck up so much of the energy, and the people that come are really focused on them, not me. I'm just their guide. And so it's really given me a level of confidence that I hadn't experienced before. And now I'm even considering doing some speaking as some of my marketing and outreach efforts. So that would be one thing. And the other that, you know, growing up around horses, we never really had time to go out and promote horses to folks who haven't been around them. Mm-hmm. And it's been really fulfilling to give people an opportunity who have never been around horses, maybe always dreamed of touching a horse, just be with them. And that has been really satisfying, especially, you know, I'm not saying anything the two of you don't know. We need to bring new people into the industry, and we need them to understand how much horses give to us. And so I find that to be really special.
Awesome. Hey, I'm going to give you a little marketing tip, Katie. If you didn't know this, the third Saturday in July is National Meet a Horse Day.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And so the American Horse Council, we do exactly what you do, but we don't do the coaching part. But we put on an event downtown in Washington, D.C. in conjunction with the USDA Farmers Market. And we have the DC Metro Police, and we have the Caisson Platoon from out at Arlington, and some local people bring a couple of horses in. And these are just visitors, people touring DC, going up and down the National Mall, and they come over to the farmer's market to find some good food because they have great stuff for lunch. And then here we stand with these horses, and so many of them, Katie, are like, can I just pet him? Tell me his name. Tell me his story. How did he get to be a police horse? What did he do before this? And how big is he? And, you know, how many hours a day? How much does he eat? And they just lose themselves in sort of getting to know what a horse is all about, which is probably the experience you have with a lot of these people who come and they think, oh, this is going to be really lame. And then they get there and they're like, oh, this is really cool.
I did not know about that. I'll have to look that up and see if there's something we could do to help promote that on our end. But you're absolutely right. I have to manage the workshops because it can very quickly digress into all of those things about horses. And one of the things I've learned that people like to watch is hoof trimming videos on YouTube. Cows, horses, you name it. People that have never been around an animal are fascinated by these. So I get a ton of questions about feet, you know, why are they wearing shoes? How do they trim them? Does it hurt them? You know, all of these things. And so I have to answer enough questions to keep them engaged, but also manage them so that we're on the topic of what their employer has paid for them to come and do. And the other interesting piece is, so I rent a facility to hold these events. I rent space on a thoroughbred breeding facility, foaling station. And because we're near Saratoga Racetrack, of course, that also brings up a lot of questions about racing and what's going on in racing. And so it's made me become more educated on different sectors of the industry than I probably would have been otherwise.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I'll forewarn you, I come to Saratoga every August to come to the Jockey Club Roundtable Conference. So next time I'm going to swing by your place and check this out because I'm really intrigued. Katie, tell our listeners how they can learn more about what you do and a little bit about, you know, maybe what you hope the class size will be. Do you take as few as a couple or do you just limit it to a number or how does that all work?
Yes, please do come and visit me. I'd love to see you. I'll also just give the plug that the Belmont race is in Saratoga this year. Yep. So if you're coming, please say hi. you can find me. I have a website. It's www.katiethecoach.com that includes a video of what you might experience that day. Also, a really cool aerial shot of the farm that we work on. I also have a newsletter that I put out on Substack called Words of Winston that is inspired by my 1-year-old colt Winston, and we talk about the intersection of being around horses and leadership and what my horses have taught me. And folks can reach out to me. The group size that I have found works the best is 10 people at a time. That gives us enough room in the space that we work in. It also creates enough opportunities for every person to be involved without hanging back. I can entertain the idea of smaller groups. Those are a little bit harder because I have to transport my horses. So, you know, I try to encourage folks to bring a bigger group so we can spread out the cost. But I'm always open to having conversations with people who are interested in seeing what we can work out for them.
Great. Well, check out Katie the Coach, and we look to talk to you again in the future so we can hear some more stories about this whole journey that you're on and what you're learning and what others are learning from you and your horses. So thanks, Katie.
Thanks, Katie.
Thank you. It was great being with you today.
Turn your love of horses into savings with equine discounts through the NTRA. Purchase through equine discounts and receive great savings on well-known brands like John Deere, Sherwin-Williams, Big Ass Fans, Farmers Insurance, and Office Depot. Join thousands of other equine members and support companies that give back to the industry we all love. Call 866-678-4289. Or visit equinediscounts.com to start saving today.
So, Julie, last month was a whirlwind for you with the release of the American Horse Council's National Equine Economic Impact Study. We thought it would be a good time to use this month's legislative update to talk a little bit more about the results and kind of tell people more about how they can learn more about the study and the results.
So, Megan, I'm going to tell you, whirlwind is an understatement. It takes a village to do an economic impact study, and we have been working on this one for 3 years. And the reason for that is we had planned to do the study in 2022, which meant 21, we were ramping up, getting ready for the study. Then it turned out because of the pandemic, we needed to postpone. So then we spent 22 ramping up, getting ready to do this thing in 23. And then we spent all of 23 doing the study. Mm-hmm. And we circulated over 20 different types of surveys. We did all kinds of secondary research. We pulled all kinds of annual reports and different data points to help us, you know, kind of formulate the plan. And I'm so glad that I have this team of experts from the innovation group who are experts in doing economic impact studies. So they do most of the heavy lift, but it's up to the American Horse Council to keep this project going and to encourage people to complete the survey. So we collect the data that the industry desperately needs, because this is our way of telling the story of how big and impactful and how much value we bring, not only to the economy, but to the world. You know, we're not just a jobs and a number, dollar number kind of thing, but we're offering so many different types of services and things, just like we're talking about today, whether it's equine assisted services or equine assisted learning or whatever it might be. We're contributing so much more in a number of different ways. And so this is the way that we capture all this data and we be able to tell this story. So I've got a few facts and figures to share that are kind of, I think, eye opening for our audience. Mm-hmm. So the first one I love to share is our metric that we call the number of equine enthusiasts in the U.S.
So this is always big.
This is a big number. So what we found is that 30.48% of all U.S. households, that turns into 39 million households in the U.S., contain a horse enthusiast. Now, isn't that an amazing number? It's just startling to me. Now, not all of them own a horse, and not all of them participate. And the last group is those that spectate. So we have three categories: own, participate, but don't own, and then spectate, but don't participate or own. So it's kind of how the three groups break out. But I always think this is such a fascinating number, because if we think about bringing new people into our industry and exposing them to the benefits of horses, look how big this audience is that we can draw from, 39 million households. I'm like, wow.
Exactly. So
we know there's 1.6 million horse owners in the U.S., but 39 million households, that's a lot of households we got left to cover who have some kind of love or passion for horses. So there's always some great statistics to talk about when we look at that number. The other numbers that I thought I'd share for fun today are the big numbers. So coming out of the pandemic, we were a little nervous, like, what are we going to learn? Are things going to be a little softer than they were in the last study? That kind of thing. No, things are really, really good, I gotta say. So horse numbers, population, are down slightly. We went from 7.2 million horses in 2017 to 6.65 million horses in 2023. But I gotta tell you, I thought that was still a really robust
number. Oh, yeah.
Because breeding's been declining over the course of the last few years. So still a really good population. I will tell you that we jumped up. We went from $122 billion in annual contributions to the GDP or the economy to $177 billion is what we're contributing now. So up by $55 billion in that short
period
of time.
That's huge.
It's huge. It's huge.
It's huge.
We went from 1.74 million jobs in the industry to 2.2 million. So the industry is growing, and we're seeing more and more of what we're contributing to the overall industry is contributing to the overall economy. So really some great statistics that are there. Not surprising, we break the industry into four sectors: recreation, competition, racing, and working horses. Mm-hmm. And recreation is still our largest sector. We love those people that get out and ride on the trails. Competition, which is showing of any style, competition and racing are sort of about the same in the number of jobs and the number of contributions they make to the economy. And then last is working horses. And that's what we're going to talk some more about today with some of our guests, because Working horses include horses that are used for equine-assisted services or equine-assisted learning, or they're used in academia or institutions, dude ranches, mounted police horses, all those fall into that working horse category. And we delved deeper this time than ever in some of those categories to learn more about what it includes and what it involves and all the things that are there. So I'm going to pause there because I've shared a lot already. If you want to check out the report, go to our website, www.horsecouncil.org. You can see some of the high-level numbers are there, and then you can buy our report, and you can check that out and see some of the things that we find fascinating about what came out of the study. And in about 3 weeks, we're going to release a second report that was the results of the study that's going to get into more consumer data and some different kinds of spending habits and things that are along those lines. I love some of these questions, but they don't tell us anything about economic impact, but they tell us a lot about our industry. For example, we said, in 5 years, how involved with horses do you expect to be? And you could say more active, about the same, less active, or no longer involved. Number one answer, about the same level. So like, that's great. Number two answer, more active. So we were on the positive end of that scale for that one question. So there's tons of little tidbits of information that'll come out in report number two in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, definitely exciting. And it's definitely a great investment to get those results. We've talked many times. We had a podcast last year about how some groups have used the previous study, which was in 2017, and how they used it to help with fight a lot of things like development and everything. So it's really exciting. And I've felt pretty lucky to be on the inside of it and learning stuff. And I get amazed just as much as you, Julie, with those numbers. So definitely be looking for that, more of that information.
Okay. So Megan, shameless plug, we are doing Data Palooza on Monday, March the 4th at 1 p.m. And since this episode of Horses in the Morning Radio is going to come out after that, feel free to come to our website and hear the replay. We're going to be talking all about the economic impact study and all about the Equine Welfare Data Collective, which is a research project that we've been doing for about 5 years. It's all about horses in rescues and sanctuaries across the country. So check it out.
Thank you for joining us today. It's always so inspiring to hear how the power of the horse can benefit everyone, no matter their age, background, or abilities. If you're interested in learning more about equine-assisted learning, we encourage you to research local facilities and reach out to PATH International. We'll also provide some links in our show notes to Strides to Success and to Katie's business.
Katie the Coach. Check her out.
Katie the Coach.
That's right. So we invite you to support our beloved industry and join the American Horse Council and earn a free subscription to our monthly newsletter, which shares the latest in all our legislative happenings, both federal and state, as well as more information that horse owners like yourself need to know. You can learn all about things ranging from biosecurity to safety on the trails to all kinds of interesting things.
Mm-hmm. Follow the American Horse Council on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, X, formerly Twitter, and LinkedIn. You can also subscribe to this podcast's RSS feed. You can subscribe to Horses in the Morning on any podcast player and find all the shows, including ours, on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com.
Great episode, Megan. And we'd like our listeners to close by, as we always like to say, we are #HereForHorses.